House Democrats flee the state house. Will a trip to Illinois improve their negotiating position? Why Republicans took on right to work, the governor's role, and the protests. That plus Richard Murdoch, the tweets that cost a state official his job, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending February 25, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, Democrats in the Indiana House of Representatives walked out to prevent the filing of a committee report on a right-to-work bill. Most of them fled to Urbana, Illinois on Tuesday. They took up residence there in a Comfort Suites hotel to, quote, review proposals, including right-to-work, and give protesters time to speak out against those proposals. They also deflected criticism that they're running away from their duty to conduct the state's business.
It is sad that we are away from the actual capital of Indiana, but our hearts and our souls are in what we are doing as it relates to trying to save the middle class from the carnage that will occur if some of the bills that are on the calendar would pass.
We're going to stay here while we work this out. I think we can work this out. The governor made a very positive statement, and I hope the Republicans heard him.
This is a very ugly process, legislation is, but it has beautiful results usually, and I think it will this time too.
Is the Democratic walkout warranted? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Kip Two, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shullum. Mike McDaniel, was the walkout a good idea?
No, of course not. It's never a good idea to shirk your responsibilities and walk away from the job you're elected to do, and that's exactly what they did. And the longer they're there, the more public opinion will be against them because the public doesn't understand why you don't show up for work and do what you're supposed to do. It's okay to debate things. It's okay to amend them, to fight your fight. But at the end of the day, if you don't have the vote, you don't have the vote. You move on and take your case to the electorate in the next election. They chose not to do that. They chose to bring the process to a grinding halt. They walked away from the job, and it's not going to serve them well.
The Democrats saw an opening with the right to work bill. They walked out by the next day, a little more than 24 hours, they had killed the right to work bill. But they stayed out. Why?
Well, it's about more than just the right to work bill. It's an assault on the middle class, an assault on labor. The very heart of the Democratic Party is the middle class and labor, and it wasn't just right to work. But there definitely was an opening with right to work because it exposed what the Republicans are really about. This is the high chambers of the Republican Party on the national level. You got people coming in here with huge amounts of money, trying to radicalize an agenda by forcing labor unions out in this country because they don't believe in the middle class.
You want to make this a conspiracy theory?
It's not a conspiracy theory. There's a guy who's given $600,000 to the governor of the state of Indiana, and
the
also
governor
given,
didn't support the right to work.
But he supports all the other things. I mean, the important thing here is that there's five or six bills out there that are just as bad as the right to work bill. What they did was they divided them all up into separate bills, and they weren't going to bring them all back together at the end, I think.
Will this walkout be successful?
Well, I guess it'll depend on what your definition of success is. It has been successful in that it has killed the right to work issue for the session. I mean, all the legislative leaders and the governor agree that that issue is dead for the session. So to the extent that the Democrats wanted that, yes, it's been successful. But I think they risk the longer they go because the stated reason was the right to work issue. And then after that was done, they brought this other list of bills. So the longer they stay out, I think the greater the risk of having them lose what they've gained so far.
Yeah. Pat Bauer produced a list of 11 bills that he said he wants concessions on, the state budget, school vouchers, the unemployment bill, which the governor signed already, so that's off the list. I mean, it seems it's pretty demanding.
It certainly is a larger list than the originally, what was stated as the original reason for the walkout, as has been said. It started with the right-to-work legislation and has grown. But in many ways, there are, these bills do fit together. They have to do with union clout, with the rights of union workers, either within the public sphere or in the private sphere, potentially to bargain collectively. Even in the education bills, you look at, I mean, there's a component of organized labor there where you're looking at the collective bargaining rights of teachers. So there's some themes here, and it's being portrayed, of course, as an attempt to stop the assault on the middle class. But Jim, what this is to me is a delayed reaction, not only in Indiana, but with what we're seeing in Wisconsin and what we're even seeing in Washington, delayed reaction to the November elections, because a lot of groups are adjusting to their new roles. You know, people who used to be in the majority are now in the minority. And I think they're trying to, the brinksmanship we're seeing here and in Wisconsin, and what we're seeing now with the federal government. You know, will there be a shutdown after the federal spending authority runs out on March 4th? We're seeing that same brinksmanship and the same vying for the public's, not affection necessarily, but their support. At many places around the country right now.
But really, this is both sides playing to its constituencies, right? It's the Republicans playing to the Chamber of Commerce and the people who wanted right to work, even though the governor and Republicans in the Senate didn't.
Look, what I found interesting about this is that the Democrats are claiming now that they are in touch with the middle class and the people of the state of Indiana, when the fact of the matter is, if they were, they'd be the one with 60 seats in the House, and the Republicans would be the one with 40. They lost the last election. They didn't only lose, they got waxed. And so the public opinion right now is not with them on these issues. So they're the ones that are missing the boat. They got to get over the fact that they lost the election and that they don't have the votes to do what they want to do anymore. And what you've got here is a lot of pent-up demands to do a lot of things that Pat Bauer, when he was Speaker of the House, never allowed any debate to happen on a lot of these issues. So now that you're going to see it take place in Indiana.
The governor suggested this week that this might be about something else, that maybe this is a setup for something later in the session, like redistricting, that it really is purely political.
I don't think it's purely political. I think it goes to the core beliefs of the Democratic Party, and one of the things that we believe is very important is that's right for people to collectively bargain and to stand up to corporate greed and corporate power. I mean, I find it amazing. Here we are, not 2 years away from the meltdown of 2000. Let me make my point. 2 years away from the meltdown of Wall Street, and Republicans want to dismantle one of the very great protections against corporate greed, and that's labor unions. To me, it's amazing that we're even having a discussion about it.
But if we're talking about differences between Republicans and Democrats, there are abortion bills there are gun bills there. Why aren't those on the Democrats' list?
This is the core Democratic belief here, is the right to collectively bargain. This is what it really comes down to, is that we will protect the middle class when it comes
this
down
is,
to it.
This is the core funding source for the Democrat campaigns. That's what this is all about.
Well, that's part of it, certainly.
And the Republicans, though, with business
sure.
and...
Sure,
but it is.
You could not do this with a bill on abortion or some of those other social issues because you don't have the same alignment. You would have people who are not willing to go and live in a hotel in Urbana, Illinois, over that issue, but they will over this issue. But what it reminds me of is a story you did, which didn't get a whole lot of attention back in October, but was insightful, and that was the supermajority that the Republicans in the Senate now enjoy, where, you know, you could have Senate Democrats say, bye-bye, I'm out the door, we're moving to another state. So what? The quorum still exists. And I think it's interesting that...
We're going to stick with this, but just right now, time for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, did the Indiana House Democrats do the right thing? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, it's too soon to tell. Last week's question was, do you support private school choice? One of the bills that's on the list. Your choices were A, yes, 10% agreed with that. B, no, 90% said no, and we had a strong response. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Back at the State House, Republicans spent 3 days trying to conduct business without the Democrats. House Speaker Brian Bosma was thwarted again and again in his effort to establish a quorum of 67 members, as no more than 63 representatives answered a given roll call. Just three Democrats were on hand. Bosma told the members and the public that he rejected a call for concessions on 11 bills.
I also shared with Representative Bauer this morning the one-word response was nuts. We will not concede to a list of demands from those who have vacated this state.
Are you unwilling to negotiate at any level?
Well, the negotiation takes place on the floor of the House. This isn't the old backroom deals that Representative Bowers used to cutting.
Kip, too, did Speaker Bosma react well?
Well, I think Speaker Bosma is reacting the way he has to, given who's in his caucus. I mean, the dilemma he faces is you have some radical new members of the House Majority Caucus, and they, as I understand it, took a secret vote and decided they were going to push this thing forward.
Right to work,
yes. And so I think that, you know, despite the fact that the governor didn't want to do it and David Long didn't want to do it, Bosma's listening to his membership. And they really are radical. You can laugh about it. But even the governor and the president pro tem.
But they got elected. There's 60 of them.
That's all right.
There are 40 Democrats. Who is it that represents the public?
Did you complain when there was a filibuster on every single bill in the United States Senate last year?
That has nothing to do with the Indiana General Assembly. It doesn't have anything to do with
the General Assembly. Does it appear now that the Republicans made a mistake by pursuing right to work when the governor came out and said that their protests are legitimate and David Long said that it ought to go to a study commission?
Should you be able to discuss and debate any issue that's before the people of the state of Indiana or that want to be brought to people of the state of Indiana? Yes, they should be able to discuss those issues and debate them. The political mistake was probably that unless you've got an agreement that the Senate's going to hear it, then maybe you don't do it. Because if the Senate wasn't going to hear it all along, why put your people through it? You know, that's the political question, a practical question you got to deal with.
Let's jump back to the Democrats for just a second. This trip to Illinois is intriguing. Is this purely a Wisconsin copycat move?
I don't think it's a copycat move. I think the fact that this happened in Wisconsin and got so much attention nationally has sort of put a light bulb has gone off in a lot of heads around, not just in Indiana, but I think you're going to see this in other states because, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, this is a reaction to November, and you have a lot of people that are trying to find their role, their collective role in this process, and they want to see how far they can push, how much they can give, how much they can take, and where the public is on these. Because I'm not sure we have a good sense, despite how the November elections turned out.
There's a
concept in Indiana called legislative immunity. You cannot arrest a legislator and make them come to the state house. And therefore, the only reason to go to Illinois is to create
theater.
A publicity stunt.
That's right. It's theater. And that's fine. I mean, I don't have a problem with conducting a little theater. I mean, a lot of legislative session is all about the theater. But in 1995, when they had a two-week walkout, the Democrats stayed in state. There was no reason for them to go anywhere
else. You could do this from a hotel downtown.
Well, you could. I mean, you don't even have to go to a hotel if you don't want to. I mean, you've made your point. The governor's not going to compel you to come back. The speaker's not going to make you come back. And unless that's the real threat, then I don't know why you do it other than for theater.
There's no telling how long this will go on, clearly, but I did check to see when the commencement is for the University of Illinois, because I'm guessing that hotel's booked. May 15th, so we know they got to be out by then.
Thanks. Governor Mitch Daniels was calm on the first day of the walkout, but took a harder line as the week went on. Here's an example of how his demeanor changed from one day to the next.
And I'm not sending the state police after anybody. I'm not going to divert a single trooper from their job of protecting the Indiana public. I trust that people's consciences will bring them back to work. I'm not negotiating with anybody who walks off the job and takes a taxpayer's check with them. Speaker Bauer has cost this has stayed a lot of money already in the taxpayers, and he has embarrassed himself, his caucus, and his party.
John Katzenberger, the governor admitted to being surprised that this walkout lasted longer than a day. Should he have been?
Yeah, I think he really was surprised, and here's why. I think the governor understood going into this that this was about right to work. And so once that issue had been cleared, I think he thought, okay, you know, the Republicans have been able to say, you know, to their constituents, we gave it a try. We had to pull it back because there were other things on the agenda more important. The Democrats were able to say, look, we got rid of this contentious issue, so everybody's happy, come back, do the work. It didn't happen because of these additional demands that came out, and I think that's why the governor reacted much differently on Wednesday than it did on Tuesday.
Okay, he mentioned cost. Brian Bosma says that it costs $18,000 a day to run the house, and therefore the cost at this point is $90,000. But most of that is salary and per diem. Salary comes in a lump sum. There's really no extra per diem cost if they finish their work by April 29th. Democrats are going to give their per diem back.
Exactly, Jim. The point just made a moment ago about political theater, that's spilling over into the argument over the costs here, because you have the suggestion by Republicans that this is costing taxpayers. People are shirking their duty. Democrats, on the other hand, are pointing out that, hey, the Democratic Party, the State Central Committee is paying for the hotel, paying for the rental cars, and they are giving back, they say, the $155 that they receive a day in per diem payments. So I think that argument is also shows just how ferocious both sides are to convey their point to the citizens of the state of Indiana.
Republicans have used this same tactic in the past.
Yeah, it was wrong. It was wrong then. I said so when they did it then.
Are you attacking Abe Lincoln?
I'm tapping Abe Lincoln. Somebody said he jumped out a second floor window to get away from. Of course, he was a lot taller than Pat Bauer.
Oh,
so it won't hurt him as
not
much.
Fair.
Yeah,
but
anyway,
a member of the Whig Party.
Yeah, it was a Whig Party.
He was Whig, not a Republican.
But anyway, look. You know, I've heard the Democrats talk about not taking their per diem, but I've yet to hear any of them say they're not taking their salary.
No, they said they're going to take their salary.
They're going to take their salary, which is wrong.
But the fact of the matter is, they get the work done by April 29th, does it matter?
Yes, it does. If they stay out another, does it matter? What about all the bills that die as a result of this?
Mike, so the Senate shouldn't take their salary this week because they didn't work Wednesday through Friday?
So far, 23.
They left on Wednesday. They got their work done.
23 bills have died. 23 bills have died. Right to work won't come back. The rest of them potentially can come back.
Teachers' pensions are in there.
All you have to do is change the rules and move the deadline back.
But they got to vote for the rules if they come back.
Well, their contention is they're working. They said they've had 100 amendments.
Last take on this. Last take. I hope they're not drafting that many amendments. Also at the State House, protests. Thousands showed up to support the Democrats. Most of them came from organized labor, and they came by the thousands. The biggest crowds were on Wednesday, but organizers say they're not done.
I want to invite more and more people to the State House every day. Next week, you'll be hearing about some evening events to include more families and more working people. So we're asking people to come take days off, work vacation days, to come here and protest. So we're going to be expanding next week to invite even more people here.
Jeff Harris of the AFL-CIO there. John Schwannis, are those protests effective?
Well, this is all about getting attention and trying to mobilize forces for your belief, and to that extent, I suppose you could say it's effective. There's an estimate that about 15,000 people have participated, maybe not all at once, various times.
A lot of those people have been there
throughout the week,
four and five times
and
over.
You had a great statistic. Better than the 15,000 statistic, Jim, was the pizza count, which you pointed out. There were people donating pizzas.
Wednesday they had 500 pizzas.
Down to 200.
Thursday,
so I don't know what you can read into the all-important
pizza count.
And they
were giving some
count
of that away.
So.
How long can they sustain this?
Well, that's the question. I mean, in order to be effective, it has to, you know, maintain some level of participation. If that falls below a certain level, then I think it loses its effectiveness.
How does this end?
Well, I'm not sure at this point, but I do think we're in a negotiation, and if the parties start talking, we might get it ending. But as long as the governor and Speaker Bosma are in their corner and saying there's no negotiation, then I don't know that we are going to end the discussion. I want to say one other thing about the protesters, and that is I think it's a good thing whenever folks come protest their government.
The governor said that repeatedly.
When the Tea Party showed up, I think it's a good thing for America, the people involved in their democracy. I really do.
You were even suggesting some chants they might use yesterday, weren't you?
Makes sense that either you get a deal or there's public pressure that brings the Democrats back? Which is it?
Public pressure. The longer they're out, the more public pressure there is, the more dissension you'll see inside that caucus. As Vice Simpson so eloquently stated this week, the longer they're there, you're going to have people inside that caucus that are going to say, look, we ought to be doing our jobs. And you're going to see that the longer they're out.
On to something else. State Treasurer Richard Murdoch kicked off a bid this week to upset Richard Lugar in the 2012 GOP primary for U.S. Senate. Murdoch made the announcement at the Arts Garden, the first stop on a six-city tour to launch a campaign that Murdoch says is supported by two-thirds of the Republican county chairman in Indiana. In his announcement speech, Murdoch criticized Lugar for being disconnected from Indiana, supporting Democratic nominees for the Supreme Court, and for his bipartisanship.
Would you like to see more partisanship?
I think there needs to be more partisanship when, frankly, it's based on principle.
And so, my friends, I'm looking forward not to simply being the Tea Party candidate, but being the Tea Party-supported Republican candidate.
Mike McDaniel, do you view this race differently because of that show of party support?
No. Why would I view it differently?
Well, you've been saying that Murdoch doesn't have a chance, but he comes out with more than 60 endorsements.
Wait a minute. I never said he didn't have a chance. I said the guy will work at it hard. But 68 county chairmen today, I mean, you know, the question is how many of those county chairmen actually deliver their counties on election day. And I can tell you that not many. Most of the get-out-the-vote stuff's done either by the candidates themselves or by the state party now. And so, you know, there are other candidates who've had a large number of county chairman endorsements who weren't successful on election day. What I was struck with was the shrill tone of the opening announcement, because I spoke to Richard Murdoch 2 days before that in the State House as I was leaving one day, and he told me he wasn't going to run any kind of negative campaign at all. Then he came right out of the box attacking Dick Lugar. So, you know, I mean, this thing is headed to a really rough go, I think.
He wants to be the Tea Party candidate and the Republican candidate.
Only in 2011 do we say that Richard Lugar is anything other than a conservative. His entire career he's been a conservative. I find it amazing and another example of how far off the rails the Republican mainstream has gotten. It is radical when Richard Lugar, a locked conservative his entire career now, is being challenged on the right in the Republican Party. To me, it's an indication how far off the rails you all have gotten.
Murdoch timed this announcement for February 22nd because he wanted to do it on Washington's birthday so that he could say that Washington was a guy who was popular and voluntarily gave up his power. Turned out that was the day of the walkout. notice where it runs in this show. He kind of got covered up.
Kinda. You know, usually the fifth item is the one that gets thrown out when we go long. So, you know, I was a little surprised, but you know, it from his perspective, that's the reality, and that's unfortunate for him. It also shows sometimes the folly of trying to make a point by, you know, tying it to something that may not be so readily apparent. I mean, if you've got an announcement, make the announcement. And this time he got burned by trying to pick a momentous date.
You can't ever try to time these things because, as I recall, Dick Lugar announced
exactly
his presidential
right.
bid on the day of the Oklahoma City bombing, yeah. which tended to push his announcement off the front page as well.
Is this karma?
I'm not into the karma thing. I don't think there's much to read into that. I think the interesting point here is Mike's, that just how shrill this will be. And you know, you can't have it both ways. You have Murdoch saying, you know, I have such tremendous respect for Dick Lugar. And even the people who gathered in Sharpsville a few weeks back, Tea Party movement, say, this is a man we respect greatly, but you got to go. I mean, you can't really have it both ways in this argument. Either you're for him or you're against him.
So Democrats are looking at this, and they're hoping that Dick Lugar gets knocked off in a primary so they got a better chance in the general. Joe Donnelly is looking at maybe running for the Senate. Does that happen?
I think Woody Myers and Joe Donnelly are both looking at that Senate race. It depends on how bad the congressional districts are drawn for Joe Donnelly, I think, whether he jumps in that race or not.
But Woody Myers may do it.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing.
So Democrats who didn't contest Richard Lugar last time at least will be there.
Well, you know, the other thing I would say that in Murdoch's defense, since no one's defending him here, is Richard Lugar is going to be 82 years old when if he were to take office after he wins
80.
The next time.
I believe 80.
I thought it was 82. Maybe it's 80. But, I mean, he's been serving in Congress for a very, very long time. And so I think that there is an argument that there's a time for you to go. Lee Hamilton knew when it was time to go.
Finally, a deputy Indiana attorney general was fired this week after he tweeted that police in Wisconsin should use live ammunition on protesters there. Jeffrey Cox says he tweeted it to start a conversation on the union issue in Wisconsin. It became the subject of an article on the Mother Jones website and then quickly spread across the internet. When questioned about the deadly force, he tweeted, "Deadly force against thugs physically threatening legally elected state legislators and the governor? You're damn right. I advocate deadly force." Kip, too, did he deserve to be fired?
Well, I know people, he worked for a Democratic administration, Republican administration. I give great credit to the Attorney General for getting rid of him for these statements. He may have been kidding. I don't think that it's something that somebody kids about. Live ammo is not very smart. I do find it amazing. Last week you're talking about hairy balls, and this week you're talking about cocks. What kind of show is this?
My.
The end of the
show.
Who invited him?
So much
who
for my mother
him?
Watching.
Yeah.
I got to take her to dinner.
But it's social media that he's using in his own time, First Amendment rights.
It's wrong. I mean, you can't do that in this day and age, especially if you're working for an attorney general.
I think that's right. I mean, Greg Zeller did, I think, the thing he had to do under the circumstances. And if he wanted to see how these things unfold, if you don't take swift action, up a few months ago in Michigan, a Republican attorney general there, one of his deputies was having a personal battle with with an openly gay activist from University of Michigan. It went on. It got ugly. Finally, he left. This is a much quicker solution.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Kip Tu, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Kenzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast or starting Monday. You can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.